And welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers. We provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for B2B marketers. And today we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. But if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be talking marketing engagement to marketing strategist at Action Rocket, Rebecca Highfield, to Director of Brand and Creative at Wood Mackenzie, Helen Mackenzie, to the Head of Social Media at Cold Technology Services, Jake Potter, to the Head of Marketing at Turtle, Carla Rivershaw, and to the CEO of Analytica, Tim Williams. Lots to like, share and follow here. So let's get started. Today, we continue our A to Z of business marketing. We're looking to give a primer on the very latest thinking, practices, and practical examples on every big topic in B2B land. And we've reached E, and E stands for engagement. We've got five experts talking on the topic today, starting with marketing strategist at Action Rocket, Rebecca Highfield. Rebecca, welcome to the podcast, and over to you.
Hi Dave, thanks for having me today. So marketing engagement is such an interesting topic because there's so many different avenues to explore. I work at Action Rocket, which is an email agency, so I'd quite like to focus specifically on email engagement. I'll be talking through my top tips to hopefully help build that engagement with subscribers. Getting your email subscribers is quite a funny thing. I think a lot of marketers presume that the hard work is building your big lists, but actually that's only the start. Getting that person to open them and engage with your emails can be such a bigger challenge. So here are my top tips. Firstly, more isn't always more. Sending more emails doesn't mean you'll receive higher engagement. You don't want to bombard your customers with emails to the extent that they get bored of your content or annoyed or end up unsubscribing. Secondly, think about your subject line. B2B readers are busy. They rely on this content to influence their big business decisions. So make your emails easy for them. Explain what the content is through short, sharp subject lines. Number three, think about your audience. How accessible are your emails? Have you thought about mobile, desktop, and fallback versions? If one person is opening their email on a laptop at home with good Wi-Fi, and then another person is opening it on a train with rubbish Wi-Fi, will they receive a similar experience? Will your emails look great for one person and bad for another? Because that's not something that you want. You want your branding to remain consistent throughout all the different devices and different experiences. Number four. What's the CTA? What call to action do you have in the email? What action do you want the subscriber to take? B2B emails often include links to white papers, infographics, and webinars. And don't make the subscriber search for this. When they open the email, you want the action to be clear. You want them to know exactly what they should be doing. And number five, be personable. This is your opportunity to connect with one person in their inbox. You're talking directly to that one person. If you've got data available on their behavior or their preferences, then use it to your benefit. Tailor your email content towards them. Just by using their first name is a great place to start. And then if you have anything extra, then that's a bonus. So something that we found that measures engagement well is asking subscribers if the content is right for them, opening that dialogue and having the conversation with them. We work with the BBC and they constantly want to ensure that their content is right for their different audiences. So we created a small banner, which we add into their different emails and newsletters, and it has a simple thumbs up and thumbs down icon. The subscriber can then click if they're happy with the content that they're being served, and if they're unhappy, then they can click the thumbs down, and that specific content won't be shown to them again. This puts you in control of what your audience sees, and they won't be served things which they're not happy with or they don't think is relevant to them. It's a great thing for many brands and a good way of getting feedback from your subscribers. So it's important to have these basic things right. As soon as you've nailed these simple things, then you can look at building upon that email list and looking at more specific email journeys.
Marketing strategist at Action Rocket, Rebecca Highfield, thanks very much. Our second engagement expert is the Director of Brand and Creative at Wood Mackenzie, Helen Mackenzie. Helen, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Hi, Dave. Thank you very much for having me. As you mentioned, I'm from Wood Mackenzie and we're a leading provider of data, insights and analytics in the natural resources industry. So as a brand marketer, I look at engagement from two angles, internal and external engagement. Internal marketing engagement for me involves getting employee buy-in to our brand strategy or our essence, and making sure that people are aware of this across the business, so beyond just the marketing team. That's involved evolving an internal culture that supports the brand from the inside out. Brands are most successful when they're built from an authentic purpose that sits at the heart of the business and then transcends across the company culture. And to borrow from Simon Sinek, it really is about understanding your why, knowing why you do what you do as a business. And by giving people that understanding that brand isn't just about what you're saying externally, they end up feeling part of the brand and they behave accordingly in order to represent it. And I feel if we get that employee engagement piece right, then the customer engagement tends to feel a lot more natural and organic because your people are behind it and they act as that proof point of your purpose. In my opinion, the real challenge is keeping employees engaged once the initial shine of a brand launch or marketing campaign wears off. Once you've sort of had that initial splash, it takes quite a lot of work to keep internal folks living and breathing the brand values. You have to be really consistent and regular with your communication on the importance of brand. And I tend to do that through a very thorough and agile engagement strategy. I mean, I'm always looking for fresh ideas around audience engagement, but I think the most successful tactic that I've found to date is bringing people into the conversation, really encouraging them to have that input, because ultimately then that you're gaining their advocacy. It really is about building a sense of community around the brand. Recently, within my business, we've started referring to the marketing of marketing. And that's referring to sort of all the activity that we're doing to make the wider business aware of what we do as a function, how we do it. But again, fundamentally, why we do it. And the aim is to build some pride in our success stories and demonstrating the value that we bring, but whilst also looking for better ways to collaborate with the other departments across the company. And we're very much in the early stages with this project. So we're focusing on getting the message right within marketing first, so that we believe in what we're saying before then taking it out to the wider market. But the way it's going, I do feel that it has the potential to put us on the map internally. From a brand point of view, measuring internal engagement is a long-term game. Shifts in brand perception and employee culture do take time, and that's where it's really important that stakeholders know the difference between KPIs and ROIs and acknowledging the value of playing that long game through brand engagement work. On the flip side of all of this is external engagement, which is obviously more measurable, but I think it encounters very similar challenges around retaining engagement and building awareness amongst audiences. Customer engagement tactics seem to come in and out of popularity, and there's always a new analytics tool that you can get that's going to tell you the optimum time to reach out to customers and in what cadence. But I really do feel that unless you've got that narrative right, it's not going to resonate. Brand storytelling is really important in customer engagement, and understanding your personas and how to empathize with their aspirations and challenges is critical. You need to be talking to the right pain points or topics of interest in order to get that cut through. And not to sound like the brand police here, but consistency is really key. When you're engaging with customers through whatever channel, you need to be consistent with your branding and with your messaging to ensure that they're receiving a unified brand experience. Within my industry, social media standards are that a B2B customer has to see a digital advert 3 to 4 times before they engage. So having that consistency is really important for the brand recognition. Thinking about it from a brand point of view, engagement is quite an odd measure of success because I'm not necessarily looking for that engagement to convert to a sale straight away. Yeah, okay, that would be a great bonus, but ultimately, I'm looking to spread awareness and build reputation that will hopefully lead to brand loyalty. In my experience, this is often best done by tying brand engagement to a strong content marketing strategy, which runs across multiple channels, providing content that is relevant and informative and inspirational to your customers, wherever they are in the digital ecosystem. And there are developments in AI and machine learning, Developments in AI and machine learning are making things smarter and easier every single day. But again, that comes back to getting that narrative right and really understanding your customers' needs.
Helen McKenzie, Director of Brand and Creative at Wood McKenzie, thank you very much. Our third engagement expert is the head of social media at Cold Technology Services, Jake Potter. Jake, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Hi, everyone. So as Dave mentioned, my name is Jake Potter and I'm head of social media at Cold Technology Services. Cold is a B2B telecoms brand and it aims to transform the way the world works through the power of connectivity. Today, I'm going to be talking to you about how to get B2B marketing engagement through the power of your employees. Your biggest secret weapon for your company is probably your people. If you have a think about your company, think about how many followers your company has on social media. And now have a think about how many employees your business has. And if you think about if every single one of those is using LinkedIn, for example, and we know LinkedIn is a huge channel for building a professional network. If each one has an average of 500 connections, how big could that audience be? This is a question I asked myself when I first joined Cult. Cult had, at the time, something like 70,000 followers across all of its social channels. But we're a company of 5,000 employees. 5,000 employees with an average of 500 connections. That's a potential audience of 2.5 million. I'm not a mathematician, so I did have to work that out prior to this. But yes, that's a potential audience of 2.5 million. And this is where I realized that Cult's people are our biggest secret weapon. Why just use Cult's audience when you have a ton of people who've got audiences themselves? And their audience, they could be customers that they've had in previous roles. They could also be potential employees of your company as well. So think about it as both social selling and employee advocacy. You're going to sell more services from your company, but you're also going to help your company with its brand awareness and getting more people into the business. And I like to refer to this as transforming online relationships into sales or into opportunities. Now, that sounds very easy, I think. Right? Maybe not. And you need to start thinking about the elements of how you're going to build a program to help your employees become your lead generation machines. And when you're thinking about this, you've got lots of people to think about. You've got people who are on different elements of their social media journeys. So if you think about the people you even know in your friendship group, you'll have people who are posting every day on social media and people who barely have a social media account. So you need to think about that when you're building a program. One size will never fit all. Even if you're just talking to one group of people like salespeople, Still, one size is never going to fit all. And you need to build a program that's going to have regular trainings. You want people to remember that they should be sharing content on social media so that they can help generate leads and transform their online relationships into sales. When you're building that program, you also need to consider data. Numbers speak louder than words, in my opinion. If you've got the numbers, you're going to be able to sell that program internally as well and really get your employees to engage with you and create engaging content. And I suppose that's the aim of what I'm talking about today. You want people to engage with you as a business. And just making sure you understand who your teams are. So I suppose that kind of goes back to what I was saying about making it easy and remembering one size doesn't fit all. Now, one of the things that I like to do is I'm trying to get salespeople to share content on social media to generate leads, generate engagement, and generate people who want to speak to cold. Now, what I like to do is sit down with salespeople. We're in a virtual world right now, so maybe not literally sitting down with other people, but sitting in virtual settings and understanding sales journeys, right? Even within your company, I'm sure the sales cycle isn't exactly the same across the board. You might have people who work with pharmaceuticals, you might have people who work with gaming, you might have people who work in telesales roles and people who work in enterprise sales roles. So you need to sit down and understand what their sales cycle is. Now, if they're in a telesales role, it might be incredibly short. So learn about that sales cycle and plug in social selling, employee advocacy, every step of the way. Same with enterprise, you might have a year-long deal. So how is social selling going to plug into that across the whole year? And also, you always need to get across why it's important. I'm going to say that a few times. Speaking to salespeople want to make money, right? They're here to close sales goals. They even want to get their commission, right? So speaking that language to them, if you're sharing that content, you're getting people to engage with you, they're going to build trust in you, and hopefully it's going to help you close your deals and make you more money. Another reason why this subject is incredibly important, just going across the element of trust. We do live in a trust environment, right? So if you buy an iPhone, you're not going to go to the Apple store and just listen to a salesperson talk to you about Pentium processors or how many pixels a camera is, because that may not necessarily be the language you speak. But people around you will speak the language you speak. Hey, this takes a brilliant picture. Well, that's great. That's one of my requirements. This phone's quite fast. It connects to the internet really well. And that's the language you want to speak. And these are the people you trust. And you need to transform your people into those people that you trust. Now, one of the questions I get asked all the time is, how can I control what people are posting? And you need to remember, with employee advocacy programs, it's not about control. Right, we do have to give away a bit of control, and as someone who loves control, that's something I've always found hard. So can you control what people are posting? The answer is yes and no. If we want to make people trust our salespeople and think of them as these trusted people that you want to buy the products and services from, you need to give them the ability to appear as an expert on social media in their own way. So as program leaders, provide them with content, provide them with pre-written posts, but give them the flexibility to make it sound like them. Because, you know, when a marketing person writes a post, it sounds like marketing's written a post. Breaking news, right? Give them the opportunity to edit it, make it sound like them. And the more it sounds like them and the less it sounds like marketing, the more they're going to sound like a real person that you're going to want to trust. But leading back to trainings and hosting regular trainings, people are terrified of writing their own content. There's this whole fear of, what if I write the wrong thing? So make sure you are holding trainings so that they can feel confident in themselves to write those posts. And then we, as the program managers, can take a break and we can remain advisors and not police people, right? We're not here to police at all. The biggest question I probably get after controlling content is about tracking. And I believe there is no person in marketing who finds it easy to track any data or any lead journey. So you do have to pull in a bit of legwork to track the results. UTMs are marketing saviors. We probably use them with our paid social ads quite often. We use them in Google ads. We do anything to try and work out where that traffic's coming from. So really make sure that you leverage UTMs for tracking data, and then you can start tracking the traffic that's coming from employees-based content. If your UTM building is smart enough, you can even track it down to the individuals. But that does involve a lot of work. And if you have lots of budget, or if you have a budget, for example, you could invest in an employee advocacy tool that then helps enable that tracking. And some tools even have the ability to auto-build UTMs and add the code so you can track it to the individual as well. But if you don't have that budget, and if your UTMs aren't that smart, you're going to have to do some legwork, right? One of the things that I did right at the beginning of my social selling journey at Colt was I spent a lot of time checking CRMs, right? We all know that leads may be generated, and they may suddenly become a lead source that's a different lead source than what they may have been in the first place. And so you have to do a bit of legwork and spend some time in your CRM. Start looking at the deals that are closing, and how did that deal come to close, and follow that journey. And was there a touch point that linked to social media? If so, I hope you used a UTM that related to employee advocacy, and then we can maybe see that that's where it came from. And then if so, let's drill down even further. Who was sharing that content? And you can start pinpointing it. And what you will get from that is results that you can show the business. Hey, social selling enabled a deal of this size. And then my final point, because it's all going to come back into what I was saying at the beginning about you're trying to get people involved in a program, you're going to have issues. You're probably going to have issues where people don't necessarily want to become involved. When you work out that social selling has closed a deal for your business, write a case study immediately. Call up that salesperson and say, tell me about your social media journey, and write a case study and share it. And your journey of employee advocacy programs in your company will become circular. And you can use that case study to enable the next group of people to then hopefully build more case studies and enable the next group of people. And then ultimately, social selling will be embedded into your company's culture, and it will enable you to transform online relationships into sales.
Jake Potter, that's brilliant. Head of Social Media at Colt Technology Services. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Our fourth engagement expert is the head of marketing at Turtle, Carla Rivershaw. Carla, welcome to the podcast, and over to you.
Thanks so much, Dave. Great. So, I mean, engagement is definitely a topic of huge interest to me. And I guess my angle on this particular topic is around the digital tools that are available to support engagement with customers. And before I go into that, I mean, what I want to say about engagement is that I personally feel it's a bit of an overused word in marketing. It can mean so many different things to different people. And I do believe it is often misunderstood. And it can be a particularly ethereal thing when it comes to measurement. And this is often where marketers fall down, particularly in the eyes of the C-suite. And for many marketers, when they refer to engagement, things they're tracking consist of, I guess, vanity metrics such as social reach, impressions, clicks, which aren't necessarily a demonstration of true engagement. And as far as the C-suite's concerned, this is so far removed from anything that they care about, such as revenue, customer insights, that it often causes marketing to be labeled as a little bit fluffy. So the good news is, I guess, that there are some tools out there to help bridge the gap between what marketers are measuring and what the C-suite cares about. So that's what I want to spend a little bit of time chatting about today. And I guess the first tool I want to talk about is one of my absolute favorites called Bombora. And while this won't necessarily give you data on engagement, it's a really great way of creating engagement with the right audiences. So we started using Bombora towards the end of last year, and it's helped our business significantly to be able to identify the accounts that we should be prioritizing to start conversations with. And essentially what Bombora does is it provides you with intent signals. And basically what that means is that it will tell you which companies are researching what things. So obviously for us, there are certain areas that align to our business And we want visibility around that. We want to be notified if a company is researching a particular area. And that's ultimately what Bombora helps us to do. And we're able to feed those intent signals linked to research areas into HubSpot. And then it will notify our commercial team anytime a company they're responsible for is researching one of those topics. And so that not only tells them which companies they should be speaking to, but it also tells them what they should be speaking to those companies about. And we in marketing provide the commercial team with the right content and the right messaging. So it's super simple for them to craft emails or call scripts to start interacting with those companies. And the result is that the engagement we see from stakeholders at those companies is much, much higher than when we're simply making educated guesses on what companies we should be pursuing. So that was the first one. The second tool I wanted to talk about is Webio. And that's a piece of technology we're actually in the process of implementing at Turtle at the moment. And essentially what it does is it helps us to personalize the website experience we offer to our visitors. So you can set up a series of rules, for instance, when companies from, let's say, the financial services sector with 1,000 plus employees land on our website, they will receive a customized experience across things like the messaging that they see, the imagery that we use, assets that we're pointing them towards. And the great thing about this from a marketing perspective is that it's pretty hands-off. Once you've set everything up, yet the visitors themselves, they get this really seamless and personalized experience. And you can actually customize right the way down to the individual account if you want to. So if you, I don't know, if Apple landed on your website, you could have a message that says, "Hey, Apple." And the content on that page could be entirely customized for them. And ultimately offering this level of personalization is really a guaranteed way to increase engagement. I mean, ultimately, how can it not when it's so clearly designed for them? So the third tool I want to talk about is Turtle. Obviously, I'm somewhat biased because I work for Turtle, but genuinely, it's a great tool for achieving engagement across your audience. And essentially, what we offer companies is an alternative way to format and distribute long-form content, whether that's white papers, sales proposals, company reports, you name it. And the beauty of Turtle is that firstly, it's grounded in psychology and how the brain receives and digests information. And the content you create in the tool is automatically formatted in a way that's highly interactive, and it's aligned to the reading brain, which causes people to really stop and slow down to digest the information. And that's gold for marketers in particular, of course, as we exist in a very fast-paced world and there's so much content out there, and it can be really difficult for your content to stand out. But we've scientifically been able to prove that through the use of some fairly basic psychological principles in the way that your content is formatted, it increases engagement with that content by 73% compared to, say, the traditional PDF. The other important thing to note about Turtle is that it's possible to personalize in a really scalable way. So actually how my team are able to use the tool is by creating guides, for instance, where depending on the data we have available on different contacts within our HubSpot CRM, we're able to automatically send different versions of that guide to them in one batch email send. So we could be emailing thousands of recipients and each of them would receive a completely customized version of that guide. And all of that is essentially done in a click of a button by us. And again, like I mentioned with Webio, there's huge advantages to going personal with your content and the engagement dividends really do pay off. The final thing to note about Turtle is that you can track how people engage with your content in a much deeper way than you can with, say, like the PDF, for instance. So rather than simply tracking how many people have downloaded your white paper, you're able to track how long they've read it for, which parts in particular did they read and which parts did they skip. And this helps you to form a much deeper picture of your audience and individual contacts within your database. And you can feed all of that data back into your CRM so that you're continually building up their profile to offer even more personalized experiences in the future and ultimately offer deeper customer insights to your sales team as well. So I guess finally going back to what I was talking about right at the start, I wanted to talk about how we bring tools like this together and use this to demonstrate the value to the C-suite. I mean, it's all well and good having these tools to drive engagement, but unless you're able to measure that engagement and translate that into meaningful insights for your C-suite, then marketing will continue to struggle to be taken seriously. So how we've approached this at Turtle is through something we've coined Project Jellyfish. And essentially what Project Jellyfish is a way for us to signal to our business and our commercial team who they should be spending their time prospecting into and what information we know about those prospects. We've developed a fairly sophisticated scoring system within our instance of HubSpot, which looks at different engagement and intent signals we're tracking through the tools I've mentioned, plus a whole bunch of other ones. And we use that information to evaluate how ready these accounts are for us to target them, and also what kind of activity we should pursue. And aside from using this data to score readiness, we also use it to better profile companies and contacts within those companies. So we have created dashboards within HubSpot for our various commercial teams where they can review the accounts that are being recommended to them week by week, as well as what we currently know about them, which allows them to not only focus their efforts in the right places, but target them with the most relevant messaging. And ultimately, this drives higher engagement across those accounts and becomes a really nice virtuous circle. And of course, importantly, the other great thing about this is that these results are noticed by the C-suite within our business. They can see the value that marketing is delivering to the business because we're able to report to them on the numbers that they care about, such as the number of meetings booked, the number of deals created off the back of the work we're doing on Project Jellyfish. So as you can see, you know, really speaking more their language, and in doing so, marketing is taken much more seriously.
Carla Rivershaw, Head of Marketing at Turtle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Our final engagement expert comes from the influencer marketing software space. He is CEO at Analytica, Tim Williams. Tim, thanks for joining us, and over to you.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here. So I wanted to talk to you a bit about, you know, how the marketing industry is changing and some of the trends which are really important and have shaped how influencer marketing has grown over the past few years. There are six key industry challenges that we believe in B2B marketing have really helped shape this. One is that there's just been an abundance of content. Everyone is a publisher now. With a global pandemic, there's just been an increase in social media content published, an increase in social media content consumed, and it's really difficult to cut through. The second key challenge is a lack of trust. You'll see through the Edelman Trust Barometer that people don't trust governments, you know, journalists, you know, C-suite individuals. They actually trust people like themselves. And so there's a real trend into creating relatable, personalized content that is much more credible and trusted by the end target audience. The third part is that advertising is not cost effective, and a lot of people have switched off to the advertising message. Number four is, even if you've got an established brand, the need to constantly reinvent yourselves and drive innovation is absolutely critical. Number five, it's really difficult to reach certain audiences through traditional marketing and communications. And you know, Fleischmann, Hillard Fishburne produced a study into 250 B2B marketing companies, and actually 39% of them were millennials, and nearly 50% of them found that B2B marketing content was boring. So that is a really good stat to back up the fact that traditional broadcast techniques are just not getting through to the new audiences. Gartner also talked about the fact that there can be six key decision makers in any complex B2B solution. And actually the Fishburne study talked about up to 15 key decision makers. So the ability to publish or create content and to service the customer journey when there are so many key decision makers is a real challenge for B2B marketing. So as I touched upon, there's a big trend and revolution to personalize content, make it relatable. More and more brands are now wanting to show that they've got diverse representation, that they're taking racial diversity, gender equality, social purpose, you know, seriously. So there's a shift in the type of content being created, and the peer-to-peer engagement on social networks and the development of community is a really, really big trend. So why is this important to influence marketing? Well, there's been a revolution from brands talking about what they do and promoting their own products to creating influencer generated content. So instead of a brand producing a white paper or a senior exec interview or an exec panel, there's much more focus on maybe interactive ebooks that feature influencer quotes or podcasts with influencers, research which is presented by influencers on what it means to industry, or maybe a future of the industry influencer predictions blog post, something which is much more relatable, much more personalized. And also because the influencers have really large networks who trust their content, it actually delivers far more impact from the brand. So there's a big revolution going on. And you know, some of the examples and some of our clients, IBM, Cisco, AWS, Unisys, Ericsson, are creating some really compelling content and just showing up in a very different way. So for example, Ivo Kerner, who was the previous IBM VP for Systems Europe, he did a video interview with Bernard Maher, a big tech AI influencer, on the future of AI and machine learning. Ericsson are doing a lot of work with Sally's, for example, on digital literacy. So, Sally's a really influential influencer in tech, STEM and sustainability, and she's producing a lot of content on LinkedIn and Twitter around those particular topics. What's great about some of those examples is that the influencers are co-creating content with brand execs and subject matter experts. And this co-creation of content between employees and influencers is really where a lot of the magic is happening in B2B influencer marketing. So those are just a few of the examples. Interestingly, influencer marketing across B2B and B2C is a $15 billion industry by 2022. And it's just really taken off. B2B is admittedly a smaller segment than B2C. But there's just tons of stats to back this up. I mean, Nielsen published one stat recently that 75% of those who viewed influencer content would consider purchasing the product. In B2B, it's not, buy my product content. It's actually much more thought leadership content. But then people associate credibility and consideration with that vendor and then are much more open to purchasing the product at a later stage of their customer journey. So all of this is really important to understand that I believe our collective mission is to create inspiring content to break away from the boring B2B mold. And you can create that inspiring content through your employees and your industry influencers, because it's much more about marketing teams to facilitate individuals to be able to create their own content. Now, how does influencer marketing show up with an organization? There are many different use cases because, of course, your PR or analyst relations have been around for decades and are a form of influencer marketing. So influencer marketing can be content marketing. It can be exec comms. It can be employee advocacy. It can be used around virtual events, account-based marketing, social selling, and also, government external affairs, if you look at the more sort of political version. So the word influence and influence marketing shouldn't just be pigeonholed into an influence marketing category. It actually shows up right across marketing, digital, social, and comms. And I think the maturity of the marketplace is going to really accelerate over the next few years, and you're going to find influencers being integrated into business as usual programs, such as PR or event strategy, right across the board. I mean, many brands are doing it already, and I think 75% of marketers are going to have influencer marketing in their budget over the next year. But a lot of people are running this in pilot mode or campaign mode, and there's going to be a massive switch to always on because that's going to yield far better results. In terms of how you can approach this, there's a five-step approach that works really, really well. So first of all, you've got to discover your relevant influencers, identifying the key topics or themes that you can create thought leadership content on, identifying those influencers that are experts influential on those topics, and then understanding exactly what drives their desires, motivations, why they would collaborate with you as a brand, is a really important stage to go through. Once you've finished that discovery and insight stage, you can activate the influencers just by scheduling a few calls with them and having a collaborative conversation about what is going to work best for the influencer as well as a brand. Sometimes it might be paid activity, sometimes it might be organic engagement. And that really depends upon whether you've got an equal value proposition for the influencer or whether you're really asking them to do some promotion for the brand. There's a lot of challenges around how you approach the influencer. And that's really important because if you say, hey, influencer, I would like you to promote my product, then it's going to be a paid opportunity. If you approach an influencer and say, hey, we've got a wonderful opportunity to be part of a panel speaking opportunity, which is going to really drive your visibility and engagement in this topical area. Would you like to be part of this? It sounds like an opportunity rather than something that you're just asking the influencer to complete. So it's really important to have that distinction. And once you have built relationships with influencers, it is important to manage them on an ongoing basis. And then there's the measurement part, which is absolutely key for you to be able to drive additional budget and to be able to demonstrate the return on investment internally. So on Litica, we published some research, which we did from the influencers in November 2020. And one of the key findings from that was that the way to really work best with influencers is to have always on campaigns, is to make sure your outreach is very relevant and focused to what they're interested in, and make sure that you're collaborative with the influencers. So that would be my advice. And in terms of the maturity of the market, then there are four stages that we look at. We've seen that brands have been quite unengaged with influencers. We now see that they are connected to influencers through some kind of campaigns. And we believe that over the next 3 or 4 years, they're going to go through an amplification stage and then an advocacy stage, where brands in 2023 will just integrate influencers into everything that they do as part of an advocacy-led strategy. So I hope that's useful. There's some big trends going on, and that's how influencer marketing is showing up in B2B marketing.
Analytica's Tim Williams, thank you very much. And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Rebecca Highfield, Helen McKenzie, Jake Potter, Carla Rivershaw, and Tim Williams. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn, and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.